let's see, what's the time on the giant clock? Why don't we move, please, to the first time certain item, please, item 847.
847, accept the Digital Equity Action Plan, Year One Progress Report.
Colleagues, the Digital Equity Action Plan is a collaboration between the City of Portland and Multnomah County Library and many community partners from the nonprofit, public, and private sectors. And as you'll recall, it was adopted by the Council of April last year. Digital equity means having access to affordable high-speed internet, a device to connect, and the know-how to navigate the digital world we live in today. While many of us understand the value of technology and have the means to access it, there are still many people here in this community, friends, relatives, neighbors, who do not have that access. And for them, these folks often represent some of our most vulnerable populations in Portland and Multnomah County, and it's essential that we come together and collaborate to find the best ways to help serve them. Digital equity was first identified as a policy goal for the City of Portland in the 2011 Broadband Strategic Plan. I'd like to especially acknowledge Commissioner Fritz, who is not here today, and Commissioner Saltzman, who is here today, for their leadership on the broadband plan. Digital inclusion and equity values are also central to any smart cities initiative that we choose to embark on. So I'm very pleased to see our city staff raising awareness and addressing such an important public service issue. Here to present a progress report on the first year of the implementation plan are Julie Omelchek from the Portland Office for Community Technology and John Rona from the Multnomah County Library. And we'll also have other presenters who are going to be here over the next 20 minutes or so to update us on the progress on this plan. So I'll just turn it over to you, and however you want to conduct this presentation and whoever you'd like to call on, please feel free to do so. And we'll listen and ask whatever questions come to mind.
Thank you, Mayor Wheeler and Council. I'm Julie Omelchek, and this is Rebecca Gibbons with the Office for Community Technology. And I'm here today with John Rona from the Multnomah County Library and a couple community partners to present our first year progress on the Digital Equity Action Plan, or as we refer to it as DEAP. I believe the report is in your packets. The DEAP specifically focuses on overcoming barriers to digital inclusion for people with limited English language proficiency, the elderly, people of color, immigrants and refugees, low income, and people with disabilities. As Mayor Wheeler noted, the Portland Council and the Multnomah County Commission adopted the DEAP in April of 2016. Council added a staff position last year to expand OCT's capacity for this work, and the library has dedicated staff resources as well. These actions supported Portland being designated a digital inclusion trailblazer city by the National Digital Inclusion Alliance. Our collaborative approach to developing the plan was also recognized nationally. But a plan is just a plan without people doing the work. The Digital Inclusion Network came together around plan development and brought diverse voices to the table. Currently, 35 organizations make up this informal network, which remains involved in guiding plan actions. The DEAP is a framework for local partners to collaborate on 17 strategic actions around five key goals critical to an inclusive, digitally connected community. These include access to the internet and devices, culturally specific training, empowering community partners, job opportunities for underrepresented populations, and supportive public policy. OCT and library staff provide what we refer to as backbone organizational support for this collective community effort. This past year, staff efforts focused on building consensus around plan design, such as defining responsibilities of staff, the DIN, and community partners, securing lead partner commitments for all strategic actions, developing an evaluation plan to identify learnings across all activities, and defining criteria to identify effective strategies related to our target populations. Due to our continuing development of plan design and work of the DIN members, many organizations have moved forward on strategic actions. So I'll turn it over to John and a couple community partners to highlight some of our work in the community.
Thank you. I'm John Warona, the Director of Content Strategy for the Multnomah County Library. Many community organizations have moved forward on the strategic actions. In fact, all 17 strategic actions are either in progress, that is in the planning stage, or on track, meaning the project is underway with engaged partners. Our year two goal is for 100% of projects to move to this on-track status. The year one report includes a chart showing project status, and more information about each strategic action project is available on OCT's website. For example, I'd like to share with you a project designed to support a deep strategic action, Action 2.3, Expand Availability of Culturally Specific Digital Literacy Curriculum. The Earn a Computer program was created by Digital Inclusion Fellows, sponsored for 1 year by N10, the Nonprofit Technology Network, and Google Fiber. The library and Free Geek each hosted a fellow who implemented the program with four partner organizations, Hacienda CDC, Metro East Community Media, Home Forward, and Human Solutions. The Earn a Computer program was offered at 7 different sites where our most digitally challenged populations live. The program had 3 key components. It delivered culturally specific, culturally appropriate training, introduced low-cost internet options, and it provided free computers. Our partner, Metro East Community Media, produced this video about the Earn a Computer program at its Rockwood DIY space. So we're going to play that now.
So we're here out at Rockwood DIY, and our goal is to bridge the digital gap.
So the issue that this program is trying to address is the people who don't have the skills and access to technology in order to be full participants in society.
El maestro cuando me invitó me dijo claramente que si yo podía asistir a las clases de computación, él me iba a regalar una computadora.
They get a free computer from Free Geek. We just spend the night setting up their computers, teaching them how to use the operating system.
Nos están dando explicación paso por paso, desde abajo. Entonces, está muy bien esta clase.
I learn a lot, and I enjoyed being with them.
Creating that access to a potential new job track, potential new interests, is really what I'm looking to create.
Like today, we had the parents and teachers conference, and it's right at the time where the teacher asked us where we had a computer at home. I said, wow, yeah, we just got one.
I mean, the first class last week, we were teaching people how to use a mouse, and we were doing it in a way that was respectful to them.
Everybody was friendly.
So a lot of kids come to our workshops because we offer childcare.
That's the big thing I appreciated first, because if I don't have a babysitter, I wouldn't be here.
We want to make sure that this is very inclusive to any person, no matter what their barriers.
People who I know are scared, so it's like I can at least like give them ease that, oh, I understand where you're coming from, but I'm here to help you, you know?
Or feel like they're our family.
I want to go to school because I want to be dependable. I want to work a good job. I want to do something better. I have my chance now.
As you can see, the Earn a Computer program is a great example of a clearly identified strategic action to remove barriers for deep target populations. The success of this work inspired the library and Free Geek to allocate resources to focus on sustaining the Earn a Computer program now that the fellowships have ended. This shows how we can amplify impact to be greater than what any organization could accomplish alone. A deep hallmark is partnerships for improved community outcomes. Now a few partners are here to highlight their programs. I'd like to invite Stephanie Martinez and Melissa McCoy from the Latino Network Betty Dominguez from Home Forward and resident Diane Ford to the podium.
And we'll come up after for questions.
Very good. Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
And if there are members of the public who'd also like to testify, you can sign up over here with Carla, and after the invited testimony, we'll certainly enjoy hearing from you as well. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Stephanie Martinez, and I work for Latino Network as a family engagement specialist. First off, thank you to everyone here, the council members present, and I also want to recognize the people behind us for allowing us this time to share one of our programs with you. Our work at Latino Network is grounded in the belief that our Latino communities are self-determined. That is, that we as community members know that we have the ability and the power to participate actively and meaningfully in any type of decision-making process that will affect the lives of our families and our own. We at Latino Network recognize the importance of digital literacy and inclusion. Our program Mobile Lab has ran since 2013 on multiple sites, and it helps families build on their digital literacy skills and support them with communicating with their children's schools and their education during their job search, among other areas of interest. This past academic year, we partnered up with Brigler Elementary School and with the Multnomah County Library to offer a total of 20 computer literacy classes at Brigler. Our initial partnership consisted in Brigler providing us the space to give the programming. For the Multnomah County Library, they offered us one of the instructors, the Chromebooks, and also the introductory material, while Latino Network offered a co-instructor and interpreter. That was me, in addition to child care, refreshments, and or dinner, and also we had MacBooks available for use. We knew that the program offered by the Multnomah County Library through their Digital Inclusion Fellowship was going to be temporary. And our families let us know that they wanted to continue learning and they wanted to continue building on their skills. So around mid-February, Latino Network took more of a leadership role in the program. Now for the good news. On June 6th of this year, 19 incredible and committed individuals received their certificate of participation in the program. All of our participants were Spanish speakers. 3 of them were self-identified males and 16 were self-identified females from the ages of 26 all the way till 80 years old. Some of our strengths were that we were culturally specific. We nurtured a sense of belonging. We also provided childcare. I want to highlight that 17 out of our 19 participants were parents of minors. And we also provided them dinner or refreshments. We recognized that the commitment that we were, that the time that we were asking them for them to commit was every Wednesday from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. One of our challenges was the ratio of participants and instructors. Sometimes we did not have enough time to answer everyone's questions. And no, we didn't have a lot of time to do one-on-ones. So for this next year, we're definitely looking into recruiting volunteers to help us in those areas. Latino Network and myself are so grateful for this opportunity. And we are delighted to continue building and strengthening our partnership with everyone. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mayor Wheeler and Commissioners. I'm Betty Dominguez with Home Forward, and I have been leading our efforts internally around social equity, especially around the bridging the digital divide. So I'm going to read my notes because I can't trust my memory, if you don't mind. So in addition to Home Forward's participation in the DIN and the DEEP, which we are a lead partner in some of those goals, we've directed an internal effort to this subject as a part of our 5-year strategic plan. The properties we're piloting our efforts at were selected specifically to represent geographic dispersal as well as diverse demographic data, such as race, ethnicity, and age. We began by conducting door-to-door surveys of residents at 3 different properties. A fourth one is in the planning stage, for a total of 412 units. We asked resident volunteers to do the surveying, and then we paid them $15 an hour to do the work. We felt that our residents would be more receptive to one of their neighbors knocking on their door. So after the data was collected, we began to select cohorts for class trainings. At the end of 5 2-hour classes, residents received their certificate and their free computer. To date, 23 individuals were able to take desktop computers back to their homes and their families Two more classes are in the planning stage for August. This opportunity has been an incredible benefit to those residents who often simply don't know what they're missing by not being connected to the internet, and especially for the children who cannot do their homework on a smartphone, which is often the only device a household has. Residents lacked email addresses, the ability to pay bills online or apply for jobs, and our seniors weren't able to renew prescriptions or stay connected to their families. But this work with the residents was only one facet of our efforts. The agency has conducted a survey of all of our properties in terms of looking for available computer labs and which buildings have computers and if any of the buildings have Wi-Fi and what are the infrastructure needs. Because it's one thing to teach residents and provide them with a computer, but if we don't have the infrastructure in place, it's an issue. So to that end, we've been working with Comcast Business Services at some of the properties, along with their Internet Essentials Group, which is focused on bringing affordable broadband access to low-income households. As we undertake the three aspects of this work, the resident trainings, free devices and affordable access, and infrastructure needs, the lack of adequate funding is a huge obstacle, particularly in view of the size of our portfolio. We own 6,500 units, and we intend to get to all of them. It will take us a while. As we embrace this challenging effort, we very much value our partnership with and support from the city and the Office for Community Technology, which has done incredible work, as well as the other partners represented on the DIN, especially the Multnomah County Library System and Free Geek. Couldn't have done it without them. There's one amazing outcome that we didn't anticipate of this work. As we were pondering how to continue the classes going forward on a long-term basis in terms of teachers, we sort of landed on the idea of resident teachers. In our first computer class at Stevens Creek Crossing in Southwest Portland, we recognized a woman in the class who had some prior skills and was very proficient at the end of the class, very personable, very outgoing. And so we asked if she would consider taking up the job of teaching the next class. And she did, and she will continue to teach classes for us. And we pay her $15 an hour to do that. So it's my great pleasure right now to introduce Diana Hanke, who will share with you what all of this has meant to her, our resident teacher.
Misnamed Diane Ford, that's one of my neighbors. So I got the privilege of teaching this last class at my complex in Southwest Portland. And we had, I think, 7 residents taking the class at that time. And with the help of our resident services person who provided our refreshments and our snacks. Charlie from the library was there to also kind of help watch over and give me some constructive feedback. I'd never taught a class before. My instructors at Portland Community College had wanted me to get up and teach their computer classes for them, and I don't do good with groups and speaking, so it's actually helping me in the long run, as is today. watching the people's faces when they got to take their computers home in June was just awesome and amazing, and I've never been able to give back to my community like that before. With Home Forward's help and WorkSource's help, I was able to take some classes and get some qualifications myself. So being able to use that knowledge and give it back to my community of 122 units has been great.
Wonderful. So. Thank you.
Well, and it's been an opportunity for her to grow her self-confidence and to step into this leadership role, and we're hoping to do that with other residents at other properties.
Yeah, that's great.
Thank you.
Thank you. We really appreciate it.
Okay. So to close our presentation, we'd like to thank the DIN members, many of whom are in the audience today, I'd like to also give a nod to our fellow core planning staff, Cindy Gibbon, Matt Timberlake, and John from Multnomah County, and kudos to Rebecca Gibbons, OCT's Digital Equity Program Coordinator, who is keeping the momentum moving forward for the DEEP. Again, the DEEP One report and information about the action projects are available through the Portland Office for Community Technologies website or by contacting our office. And so with that, we'd be available for questions, and certainly if you'd like any of our guests to come up, they'd be happy to participate as well.
Very good. Colleagues, any questions?
What is DIN again?
The Digital Inclusion Network.
Okay. Trying to keep the acronym straight.
So what are the biggest challenges going forward? It sounds like you've had a lot of success, and you gave us some concrete stories today, and I'm very impressed with the results you've achieved with relatively limited resources, and I'm really impressed with the partnership you built. I've always just felt this is the way to get things done in the communities, is build these robust partnerships. But what are the challenges when you get together behind closed doors? What are you most worried about? Where can we be helpful?
Well, maybe I'll start, and then John and Rebecca can add a couple things as well. I think the biggest challenge for us will be growing our network and our partnerships. One of the things that is a charge that DIN has charged themselves with is reaching out to communities of color, our key organizations around that, and also down into, deeper in the community for those small organizations that might not right now have the resources to include digital literacy training in their services to their constituents. Identifying those groups and then figuring out resources within the DIN community to help them provide those kinds of services.
I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, I was going to say, so I think, Chair Wheeler, you kind of hit it on the head that growing these kind of networks is really important, because as the city, we feel like we're more of a facilitator of that than we are going to, go out and actually provide all the services in the community. So yeah, I think that's probably one of our biggest challenges.
Which communities do you see as being the most underserved at this point? Where is the biggest target opportunity from your perspective?
Boy, that's a difficult question to kind of delineate. I think the most underserved community in this regard. I mean, the statistics in Portland play out so that in the DIN or the DEEP, in the development of the DEEP, we did identify communities through the data we had that were underserved and tended to be digitally excluded. But one of the aspects of our work is that each community, and each kind of segment of a community requires different kind of supports for them to be, to be comfortable coming online and having access to the internet and devices. So I think that's just a hard question for me to answer, and I don't know if it's specifically answerable. Data may show that there is a segment of a population that is the most underserved, but I think we have a swath across different populations in the county that are underserved.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it.
I'll just tack on. Sure. Yeah, that we identified our target populations, and these are folks with limited English language proficiency, the elderly, people of color, immigrants, refugees, low income, and people with disabilities. And so, there's a lot of overlap among all of those groups. And I think, as Julie said, the data, will show as we go on, where in there we should focus most. In our example, we focused on refugees. They were folks with limited English proficiency. They were English language learners, so you saw a lot of overlap in that group. I would say that, for the challenges, one is sustainability and funding. So we were lucky to have the N10 Google Fiber Digital Inclusion Fellowships. Those were two full-time, one-year positions in Free Geek and in the library. And some of that funding from those institutions supported more than 150 free computers that were given out. But there is an overhead to provide those computers, so making that sustainable going forward will be an issue. And one of the other things that we're trying to provide is internet access. So we can provide the training. The library is really good at that. We can introduce, low-cost options. And in this case, we're able to give devices, but that internet access is a challenge. We provide it in the libraries with Wi-Fi and with our wired computers and with Chromebooks that you can check out in the library. But getting wireless internet access or wired internet access into low-income communities is actually one of our strategic actions, and that will really require a robust institutional network throughout the community that we can build upon, increase bandwidth upon, and really scale up to the next generation.
Very good. Commissioner Udaly?
You just touched on my main question, which was the ensuring access to affordable high-speed internet. So that's a problem to be addressed. Is there any conversation about some kind of municipal broadband?
I'll address that. I think that it is a has continued to be a interest of the city over the years to try and figure out what is a good way to engage in providing internet access, low-cost internet access to the home. I do think that with the Smart Cities Steering Committee and OCT's participation on that, we will be able to, start looking at some of the future applications and how we can build a broadband infrastructure that supports those kind of applications and supports broadband internet, especially in our low-income areas that tend to be underserved more because of cost than connectivity in a lot of ways.
And have there been any conversations with our local internet service providers as to whether they'd be willing to offer low-income discounts?
Mm-hmm. Well, a couple of them do, and we have some information on our website about that. I'm most familiar with Comcast and CenturyLink's product, but Rebecca, do you want to add or talk
sure.
a little bit more about that?
Comcast does have an Internet Essentials low-income service offering. It is available to families who have children in the public schools who qualify for the free and reduced lunch program. It's also available to residents of housing properties. And CenturyLink also has an Internet Basics program, which is also available to low-income residents. Those programs are available. We are sharing the information with our partners through the DIN network. They are self-educating themselves on the availability of these programs and making sure that they are educating residents who are participating in the training programs about their options.
Can you give me an idea of what a monthly affordable internet would cost? Either through that program mm-hmm. or a number that you've come up with that is manageable for most of your target population?
Well, both programs are about $10 a month. Some of them kind of ratchet up after a year of service. So I think what's difficult...
Just like wages.
Yes. I think what's difficult, especially for our low-income populations, is that really any cost, even a $10 a month cost, can be not affordable.
Yeah.
And then adding to that, not knowing what the cost is going to be or having to anticipate an increase even after a year can be difficult.
One of our action plan items that we are just starting to launch is the possibility of working with, and we have willing partners in this, the public agencies, school districts, the city parks, those kinds of, the libraries who have facilities in neighborhoods, to see if we can leverage the connectivity at those public agency sites to create wireless networks that push further into low-income neighborhoods to provide free internet access. So, you know, those kind of things take a while to figure out among public agencies and then, of course, with our community partners. But we're hoping to have some pilots within the next year around that.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any public testimony on this item?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. Commissioner Saltzman, I apologize.
What kind of outreach are we doing to older adults? You mentioned they're one of the target populations. What are we doing?
Well, through the Housing Authority, we are targeting folks through that program. We are engaging and trying to identify other organizations that have direct contact with our elderly community, and we'll be bringing those folks to the table. That is one of our strategic actions, is to continue to identify organizations that work with our targeted clients and populations and to bring them to the table to help provide them with the resources that are available. One of our strategic actions is to develop an online resource for our community organizations that would then give them direct access and an ability for us to pool all of our training and our curriculum and in various languages that would help then for our service organizations to better serve and reach their targeted populations.
Are we working with Meals on Wheels, for instance?
We have had some initial contact, I think, at the beginning when we first launched the program. We have not had any recent contact, but they're definitely on our list.
Okay. And then I was curious, I think John mentioned the fact that there was 150 desktops that were donated last year to the individuals who took the digital equity course. Is that the right word for it? Okay. So, you know, we have a policy in the city, I know you're all familiar with, where we donate our computers to Free Geek, and I assume some of those are laptops. Is there any reason why we couldn't, as a city, ask Free Geek to set aside the 150 of those that we donate a year for purposes of students who successfully complete the digital equity inclusion course? Right.
So I can't be certain, but I wouldn't be surprised if some of your computers actually made it into the hands of those residents, because that's exactly the pipeline. Both the city and the county donate their surplus equipment to Free Geek. They refurbish that equipment and load it up with a brand new operating system. They provide 1 year of tech support for those devices. So it's really important and essential that we have those partnerships with the city and the county, and we do. But nonetheless, there's still an overhead of about roughly $200 to get one of those devices through the pipeline and back into someone's hands. So that's what we're trying to make sustainable going forward.
And okay. Colleen is here from Free Geek, and I believe she's signed up to talk in the public testimony part, so she could probably answer a little bit more detail.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. How many people do we have signed up for public testimony?
I have two people signed up.
Very good. Anybody else want to sign up?
Samuel.
All right, let's close the list.
Samuel Pastrick and Michael Duro.
Good morning.
I wasn't speaking up, but I will.
That's fine. Come on up.
Okay. Like, I will speak up.
Colleen, you want to go first?
Yeah, I could just answer that question really quickly. Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm Colleen Dixon. I'm the Director of Development and Public Services at Free Geek. So, yes, those are exactly the computers that are going back to the community, and I think that's an amazing example of how we're building stronger networks, and we're creating kind of this huge safety net of city computers going to Free Geek partnering with the library partnering with all of these organizations and housing communities, and we're just creating this amazing community and support for this work, and it comes at a huge cost, right? Because the computers that come to us to Free Geek are great, but we have to pick them up, we have to test them, we have to wipe data, we have to load the operating system, we have to come teach the classes, we also have to provide a year of tech support and warranty so we can ensure that those computers are still usable. So all of those services are kind of the overhead price that we're looking at when we partner, and what is the sustainability of doing that. And recognizing that overall, I think those have been a lot of our conversations in DIN, is we can create these connections, but how do we resource them to continue? Because as Julie mentioned, a lot of nonprofits that we want at the table don't, I mean, FreeGeek's lucky, right, because our resource, or our mission is already so aligned with this work, so it makes sense for us to show up and be there. But when we have to make the pitch to Meals on Wheels or another organization to say, hey, partner with us, they don't necessarily have digital equity built into their work or their strategic plan. They don't have endless resources to add staffing to that. So I think in moving forward, we're really doing a great job of looking at how do we sustain these networks and these partnerships, how do we bring more people to the table, and how that's going to work. And a huge resource is the computers from the city and the county. And thank you, and especially to you, Commissioner Saltzman, for arranging that relationship for so many years.
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Good morning.
Oh, please go first. Sure. Good morning. Sam Pastrick, Oregon Cub. I'm the consumer advocate and membership manager. So I'm going to, a little bit of background, and then I'm going to make two quick points. Both actually relate to something, Mr. Mayor, that you said. So just as a point of background, I participated as Cub's representative in the deep planning sessions. There were three of them. I think I actually only attended two. But so we've sort of been a part of the process all along the way, and then I'm a fairly active member on the DIN, the Digital Inclusion Network. So two quick points. I think really the work that was highlighted by both the Home Forward and the Latino Network projects not only sort of highlights the imperative of the plan itself, but moreover kind of the critical function of the office, the city office in OCT that I think, as Julie put it, sort of facilitates that community interaction, that outward-facing interaction. And a question that you asked, Mr. Mayor, was, you know, challenges that folks see in facilitating this work. And a challenge that certainly Cub sees, as well as our partners at the Mount Hood Cable Regulatory Commission, is, and it's nothing new, it's something that we've been very public about in the past, is what we perceive as being sort of a low, an inappropriately low organizational status for the Office for Community Technology. So I presented and submitted a report way back in 2016 in November. Obviously, I testified in support of the Smart City Steering Committee, and we subsequently provided a memo in relation to that topic. So I did want to quickly touch on that. But to circle back to both the Smart City Steering Committee as well as the recently passed Open Data Ordinance, I think those are two prime examples of why this work, why digital equity work is so critical, so paramount. And that is ubiquitous broadband adoption, especially for vulnerable communities, is sort of the foundation, we would argue, that Cub would argue, of those two policies. You can't expect for smart cities work to be elevated or to move forward in the right way, or an open data ordinance, an open data policy to move forward in the right way, really without ubiquitous broadband adoption. And again, I think that comes back to why the function of OCT as the predominant city office who's working on these projects really is so important. And so again, we would really strongly argue that their position within the city underneath the Revenue Bureau is just sort of inappropriately low. And that's really all I want to say.
I appreciate that.
Excellent.
Thank you. Thank you. And that is all of our public testimony on this item.
Michael.
I'm sorry, Michael. See, this is why I go in order. Thank you, Michael.
Good morning, Dan. Good morning, Ms. Yudley. I'm not so sure I said that correctly. My name is Michael Duro. I'm a longtime Portland resident. I first came here in October 13th, 1967, when my mother and I, we didn't immigrate. My mother immigrated to the United States. I came home. So my family's been here since my grandmother just barely got out of Vanport. She worked in the shipyards. I'm a long time advocate for labor, the disabled, and communities of color. I haven't been disabled most of my life. I am also an elected representative serving on Metro. Not Metro, MESD. I run for Metro, and the reason why I mention that is because I was involved in putting high-speed internet infrastructure into inner northeast Portland and outer southeast Lentz. I was a consultant for the developer that worked for PDC, and we got that project. That was a lot of money that Quest had taken from the people that we got back. I actually came here to speak about PERS, but I wanted to speak about, if I may, I would like to speak about the digital divide. Is that all right?
Yes. Digital divide is definitely related to the subject. PERS is not.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
Well, the reason why I want to speak on PERS on my own behalf because I'm a PERS beneficiary, and I was interested in...
I picked digital divide.
Okay.
I had to check. You gave me a choice.
I'm a self-taught network engineer. I've got two Cisco certifications going back to the mid-90s. I'm very interested in using technology to improve the lives of everybody, very much including poor and disabled people. On the MESD, one of our charges is as the lead agency for the Cascade Technology Agency. And it's a shame, but I've been struggling for the last 2 years on the board to try to convince my fellow board members of the value of Free Geek. Free Geek is a jewel of the city that is now being replicated all over the country and I think in other parts of the world. The technology that we throw away is usable by somebody.
That's
right. Trying to find all my notes. How much time do I left? I'm a declared member, just for full disclosure, I'm a declared candidate for the city's council for Dan Seltzman's seat. So I want to say that, I want to urge you to think about setting up a metropolitan area network.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you for your service on the ASD. Thank you. Can I entertain a motion at this point, colleagues?
Move adoption of the report.
I'll second it.
We have a motion from Commissioner Saltzman, a second from Commissioner Udaly. Any further conversation, colleagues? Hearing none, please call the roll.
Saltzman?
Well, thank you to the Office for Community Technology for the presentation. Rebecca, Julie, and John from the library, appreciate it. And appreciate all the work. It's very impressive, this network that's developed to tackle this most important problem is how do we bring everybody along into the 21st century in terms of staying in touch. I asked about older adults in particular because I think older adults are lonely and they need to turn, as all of us do, we turn to technology now for companionship. And it's important to have that for them. And it also helps them stay in touch with relatives and family. And certainly I think your work you're doing with immigrant communities is also just as important too, because it can be a very lonely experience coming to a country where you may not speak the language as your first language. And so it's just vitally important that we work with these targeted populations that the Digital Inclusion Network has focused on. So thank you very much. Aye.
Udaly?
I just want to thank everyone for the excellent report. I also want to let you know that this is a keen interest of my office, so if you want to come talk to us, brainstorm with us, we would welcome that. Some people might read this report and see 15% of Portland residents don't have adequate internet access and think that that's insignificant, but that's roughly 95,000 people in our city, and those 95,000 people represent some of our most vulnerable, underserved residents, and the very people who could often most benefit from having internet access, whether it's to apply for jobs or housing benefits, online education, certainly children who are in public schools. It's vitally important, and I am excited to talk about more about municipal broadband as we move forward. Aye.
Wheeler.
Great report. I want to thank everybody who testified today, and I want to thank all of the partners who've been so actively engaged in this this conversation, Commissioner Saltzman and Commissioner Fritz. If you were here, I'd say the same thing. Thank you for really showing a lot of vision. For better or for worse, digital technology is the economic and social connector in our society. And as Commissioner Udaly just rightly pointed out, if there are 15% of the people in this city who are not able to connect digitally, they are effectively being excluded from those social and economic connections that are so important today. So the work that all of you are doing is critically important, and I'm really proud of the work that you've done. I also just want to reflect specifically on sort of the micro issue of the Office of Community Technology. I want to revisit that because I think you have a point there. It seems like sort of an odd fit under revenue because it's not really a revenue play. That's not the point here. The point is really access to both the social and economic connectivity that this new technology not only provides but now is an essential requirement. So to be continued, and
thank
I appreciate you raising that issue again. I know you've raised it previously. Yeah. So great report. I look forward to further progress. Aye, the report's adopted. Thank you all. Next item, please.